But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. Good morning, welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell, and I'm here with co-host, dear friend, and producer, Stu Schrager. Hey, Stu.
Good morning, Tom. This weather is like I'm very anxious because I'm ready for spring.
Yeah, you don't know how to dress. I mean, I went out the other day with like a t-shirt on, and I had the shock of my life. It was like 38 degrees. The day before it was like 58 or something. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah, the other night, my granddaughter was in a play in South Merrick, or South Belmore, actually, and I took my mom, and you know, during the day it was like, it seemed like high 50s or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, we expected it to be like that. Then we get to the school, and there's a line out the door from wherever this school is back up to Merrick Road.
And my mother goes, detector.
Yeah, my mother goes, oh, if I only wore, you know.
Yeah, a scarf, a coat, muffin, mittens, earmuffs, you know. Yeah, it's that weather's funny.
The wind is what changes it. I guess plus it was on the water. It was South Shore, Belmore, but the wind whipping around just.
This is what makes me kind of giggle when I hear all of this climate change stuff. Is that you know, the weather is so unpredictable. You know, and I had restaurants on the East End, and when I was in Montauk years ago, they would start giving a weather forecast, you know, on Monday, what was going to happen the following Saturday, you know, and everybody's making plans for the weekend. I'm like, these people, they don't know, you know, instead of Doppler radar, they should cut a bay window in and take a look every once in a while.
Well,
know?
If I'm not mistaken, the other day they said later in the week it was going to be snow flurries again. So I'm totally lost.
Yeah, and then
lost.
2 days later they changed it. Well, no, you know, it's going to be 80. You know, it's hard to snow at 80. I don't know.
I don't know if it's always been like this, but I keep noticing that around 5 o'clock at night, it gets bright and sunny. Mm-hmm. Like during the day, it would be like cloudy and not pleasant, and then all of a sudden, 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, the sun is out bright and
yeah, just in time to play nine holes. You know? So I met a nice couple. You know, I was out. I stopped at Pominock the other day, Vineyard, see my daughter, and met this really nice couple over there, tasting wine, and they said. They listen to the show every week, and they wanted to say hello to you. They wanted me to say hello to you.
Hello.
And gave you big props, you know, compliments. They said, Stu, he's so funny. He's such a good guy. I'm like, yeah, is that right? You know?
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, let's bring it down a little bit.
No, it was great. It was great to see him. So they said hello, and they were really big fans of the show, and it was really nice to talk
so
to them for a while.
That makes me want to just share with our audience that I shared with you last week. It turns out on the radio dial on Sunday mornings, in age group 55 plus, our show is number one.
I know it's incomprehensible to me personally, but it is. It's fabulous. You know?
So to our audience, we thank you very much. And if you want to talk with us, it's fire@whli.com. fire@whli.com.
Yeah, you know where I was last night? I went to Hidden Harbor over in Bayville. A friend of mine was playing there last night, so I went to hear him. He's a Cosmo Malardi. His name is. He's a very talented guy. He's a music and voice coach over at LIU. And he's playing piano and singing. It was a great night. Cool little restaurant. If you're ever up in Bayville, it's just when you go over the bridge, you make a right.
That's sort of just a little bit north of Oyster Bay, right?
Yeah. You got to go up Shore Road or whatever. Over the bridge. You go over the bridge, you get to a light, you make a right. It's down about maybe a quarter mile on the
left-hand side. There's a beautiful restaurant up that way. Crescent Club or something?
Yeah, the Crescent Club. It's just past that. You know, Crescent Club is gorgeous. It was built by the guy who owned that big gaming company. I can't remember the name of it now. But he made, you know, video games and stuff, and he opened that place. A friend of mine was the chef there when he first started, Richard Allen. And he's got a beautiful spot right on the Sound, you know.
Yeah, a lot of people say that that's the best sunset on Long Island.
Yeah, it's up there. I've been there for sunset. It's really cool. A friend of mine got married there, too, about, I don't know, 20 years ago, whatever it was. You know, they do a lot of catering, you know, marriages on the beach, you know, kind of thing. It's really nice.
It's actually got an interesting layout, if I'm not mistaken. It's sort of multi-level going out to the beach.
Yep.
People get married on the sand. And
Yeah, I did a big event years ago there with Michael Meehan. We did a, we had a, an organization called LIFE, which was an acronym for Long Island Food Experience, and we were trying to make people aware that Long Island had almost kind of like its own cuisine and talented chefs and cooks and stuff, you know. So we had this big dinner there. It was a seven-course dinner, and we had a like a marketplace on the beach. It was really cool, you know. It was a nice, nice day.
It's interesting how you just said what you did, a seven-course meal, because in the green room, we have a dinosaur, and I'll try to explain that as we introduce our guest.
Yes.
But it's not unusual to have a seven-course meal when you're sharing some time with our guest, Gus. So
Let's bring him in.
Good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, Gus. How are you?
Good, thank you.
So let's see if I can get the pronunciation right.
Oh, boy. Wait a minute. Let me get my helmet on.
No, I did good, Gus.
You did. Yeah, Gus is good. You had a hard G.
And it's Chorvis?
Yes, you did perfect. Very good. Very
okay.
Good.
So Gus is
go
the
spell
owner.
It. I dare you.
I can
kidding.
Do that.
I'm kidding.
But Gus is the proprietor of the Embassy Diner.
Yeah.
And as we keep hearing and reading in the newspaper, diners are going the way of dinosaurs.
I got to say one thing, though. I think Gus is probably the owner of the largest collection of American flags I think I've ever seen.
Yeah. Fabulous. Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. We love our country.
It's,
yeah, man.
It's definitely
yeah.
Gus and his family is very supportive of law enforcement.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's when you walk through the entrance, there's all these pictures. And again, it's the mindset's in the right spot.
Oh, if you got to have a cause, you know, I can't think of one better.
Well, my brothers and sisters are all police officers.
So, are they really? Yeah.
Yeah, my brothers and sisters are all police officers, so that helps a lot, too. I see what they go through.
Sure, yeah.
So I try my best to do anything I can to support them.
Good for you. My dad was a policeman. He switched over to the fire department about 10 years in. But I do the same. Every time I see a policeman or a trooper, I always say, hey, man, thanks. Appreciate what you do, you know. It's a thankless job, too, now. You know, that's the problem.
I was always told from a long time ago, a lot of the police officers and everything they do, they don't get paid for what they do. They get paid for what they might have to do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Might have to do.
Yeah.
Well, that's very interesting because a lot of times I'm in the city and you see a lot of police officers in Times Square. I go to see a Broadway show. And sometimes some of the people I'm with, oh, look over there. They're just standing around. Believe me, I'm happy they're standing around
yeah.
because when I need them and they're there,
yeah. What's
I'm
the
a happy camper.
I know. I remember watching when they were doing all of that defund the police thing and they were interviewing this guy in Chicago. And they said, you know, we're going to defund the police. He goes, you go to what? Are you kidding me? Been here? You know, it's like nuts.
No quitting.
Yeah, I mean, what are you doing? You know, crazy.
So again, Gus is the owner of the Embassy Diner, which is in Bethpage on Hempstead Turnpike, mm-hmm. Right off Route 135.
Yes.
And it's crazy because it's like all roads lead there. But Gus, give us some background. You're a young guy, and yet you've got probably the one of the most fruitful diners on Long Island.
I attribute that mostly to my past. My father has been in the restaurant business since 1973. I was groomed for this. I was born to do this. It's not just something that you can pick up and learn. You have to have it in your blood. And hard work. I attribute everything to hard work. I learned from the best. I learned from my dad. And he's had diners. He had one in Rosedale, Queens from 73 to 90. He had one in Seaford from 1990 to 2000. He had one in Islip from 2001 till 2022-23. And that's where I learned everything from. And that's when I picked up and I left and I bought the Embassy Diner because I wanted to do something for my family. I became a father and had three kids and a beautiful wife. So I wanted to support them the best way that I knew.
Yeah, you know, diners to me are such an iconic part, excuse me, of Long Island and probably Jersey, too, is the only other place that I am. Somebody, there's some in Westchester or whatever, but Long Island and diners are almost, you know, tea and crumpets. I mean, everybody had a diner in their town or close to their town growing up, you know.
Well, the proof of the pudding is I went to school up in Syracuse, mm-hmm. and when I got there in 1975, there was no so-called diner. And then all of a sudden, a diner opened up, and it was like the place to be. It was
couldn't
like home.
In. Yeah.
Because just like you said, everybody was from Long Island or Jersey,
sure,
or Westchester, and it just brought hometown spirit back.
Well, you know, I think diners touch everybody. You know, it gets the kids who don't have any money. You know, they can go and have a corn muffin or disco fries or something. It gets the teenagers, you know, afterwards. It gets the parents because, you know, you want a good meal at a decent price. And they always had the, you know, the entire, you can get a soup, a salad, a dessert, whatever, for $22 back then. And it gets the older people who are on fixed incomes. I mean, it touches everybody at some point, right?
It's the best thing for me is when you see families, when you see little kids come to the diner, there's nothing more rewarding to me because the little kids take their families, mom, dad, I want to go to the diner.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's rewarding when you see the little kids to keep up the tradition of the diners. That's the most rewarding to me when you see the little kids say, I want to go to the diners because you know there's still a future for diners because the kids want to go.
Yeah, no, it's true. And you know, the other thing is you can pretty much get anything you want any time of the day, you know, which is, I mean, it's anathema to me because, you know, I'm in the high-end restaurant business and I know how difficult it is to put that stuff out. But that was the thing. I mean, you could go at, you know, 6 o'clock at night if you want an omelet, you could get it. You know, you want a corn muffin, you can get it.
I had a lady yesterday there, and she ordered pork chops at 9:15 in the morning.
That's kind of me. I do the same thing. I'm always like, can I get a Greek salad? 7:30. Yeah, I know. But it's the kind of, you know what it reminds me of? When Cheers first came out, everybody knows your name. I always said to my employees, I want everybody who comes in here to feel like Norm on Cheers. Norm, hey. And it's the same thing with diners. You know, when I was a kid, I had a paper route in Westbury. And Libby's Diner, which is now Majestic on Old Country Road, right? And it was a little silver thing, you know, like they had years ago. And I go in there. It was halfway through my paper route. In the middle of January at 6 in the morning, it was freezing, right? So I go in there to warm up. And they had this waitress there. And I think her name was Diane. And she was like the flow of her time. She had the beehive hairdo with the eye makeup, you know, kind of when you think of diner waitresses, you think of, you know, the old diner waitresses. And she was very kind, and she would make me hot chocolate and a corn muffin or whatever. And I always remembered that. It was like when I go in there, she go, Tom, you know, I felt like, wow, I'm a regular, you know, kind of thing. It was
you felt at home.
Totally. It's like an old pair of sneakers, a comfortable kind of.
That's what I say to people is, you know, in order to be successful, you have to be able to differentiate yourself from everybody else. I mean, back in the day, how many diners there were? There were plenty of diners.
Oh, right? Yeah, yeah.
Anybody can serve you a cheeseburger. Anybody can serve you a corn muffin. It's how you serve the corn muffin. It's how you serve the cheeseburger with that, hey, Tom, how you doing today?
Sure.
How was your day today?
Yeah.
It makes a big difference, a big difference.
Huge difference. It's the difference between service and being served, you know what I mean? We had an old customer, Sidney Felstein. He was the most ornery, miserable human being I ever met in my life, and we couldn't wait to see him every day. He was a part of the fabric, a cool fish, you know. And one day, he ate lunch every day in my restaurant for 7 years. Never had a good meal. Always complained. He was hilarious, you know. So one day he doesn't show up, so we're thinking, oh, my God, check the hospital registers, you know. When we were calling the cops, the whole thing. We finally get him at home. And he said he didn't want to come out because he was afraid to drive. It was snowing a little bit. So I said, well, we'll come and get you. He goes, you would come and get me? Yeah. So then from that day on, every time there was a weather event, like, you know, partly cloudy, you know, he would call us up for a ride. We did. But that's the difference, you know, I mean, between
it's
just,
huge difference.
Yeah,
it's
you know,
huge
and, you know, he always remembered his family after he passed away. His family remembered yeah. it, you know. No, I think it makes a big difference when you have that personal touch.
In this world, you need to give to get.
That's yeah, amen, amen. And diners, I mean, you know, what eating establishment is more generous than diners? I mean, when you go, you can get a, you know, when they do the whole dinner, you can get a cup of soup or a salad, you get an entree, you get vegetables, you get dessert.
Coffee.
Yeah, coffee.
Bread basket.
Jell-O. You know? Then there's a piece of lemon meringue pie that's a foot and a half tall. You know, it's great, you know.
But when you walk into the Embassy Diner, you're greeted. If it's not you, Gus, it's, I don't know the gentleman's name, but there's a guy.
There's a whole bunch of them. There's, the, you know, there's Caesar, there's Evelyn, there's my brother
Jimmy. There's the woman that's behind the register.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of them. You rub off on that family feel. They saw when I first bought the diner, it was hard because they were from the old owners, you know, and they didn't know my style.
Right.
It took me a little bit, but once they see when they see somebody working like I work,
sure,
they want to jump in and do the same thing.
So yeah, you lead by example.
Exactly.
Actually.
Okay.
What type of hours do you actually put in?
That's you know, we
because if I listen to Andy Rothstein, you're there 24/7,
7 days a week from 9 in the morning to 9, 10 o'clock at night. That's how it is. In order to be successful in the diner business, unfortunately, the right way to do it is you have to be there. And that's what makes the difference of us compared to other diners is that we're always there on top of our game.
Sure. I always said that, you know, the restaurant business is a funny animal. It's been my passion and my prison all at the same time. But if it's in your DNA, you can't do anything else. And if it's not in your DNA, you can only fake it for so long. And then it's going to get you and eat you up, you know?
I can't fathom. I've never been in a kitchen at a diner. Needless to say, at most restaurants, I'm not in the kitchen.
Yeah.
But when you look at a menu and your restaurant, your diner, still has a very complete menu. Some diners now have like...
the one paper menu.
Yeah, yeah. They laminate it.
After COVID, and they left it after COVID and they never changed it back.
But yours is multi-pages. How do you have all the inventory of food to be able to make anything from corned beef to meatloaf to eggs and whatever? And are you charging extra for eggs these days?
No, I went on the news. I said I wouldn't charge as long as I could take it. And then, you know what? It worked out because the eggs went right back down.
They did.
They went right back down. So it worked out. I didn't charge any surcharge or anything. But to answer your question, we have, with the chef and me, we sit down and we do our ordering every week. And what's good about our place is it's so busy that nothing's sitting. It's
usage.
Boom, boom, boom. The usage is through the roof.
Yeah.
It's harder, to believe it or not, it's harder that when you're slower to keep up with it because you don't know exactly what you're using. You don't know what you have to throw away. You know, when you're so busy, it's actually easier because everything's just flying off the shelves and everything stays fresher that way.
It's incredible because when you just think of what, I mean, sliced turkey and even the burgers and burgers, you know, when we were growing up, Gus, you're a young guy, but Tom and I, there was just a burger. Now there's a turkey burger, a vegetable burger, a portobello burger.
With eggs on it, with cheese, strawberries, you know, it's like nuts, you know. You know, Valerie's Greek, right? So, I mean, once a week we have to go to a diner, and then once every 2 weeks we have to go to a Greek restaurant in Astoria, which is great for me. I mean, I love it, you know. But the diners, to me, I mean, I was just in one in, I guess it was in Wantua, and I ordered soup, and I wasn't really expecting much. It was great. I mean, it was a clam chowder. It was like stellar, like you could get in any, you know. And I think that the shame of it is there's a lot of talent cooking in diners. You know, when I was growing up, my friend, his name was Sotirios Liberatos III, right?
So nice Greek name.
Oh, yeah. You couldn't spell it, and it took you 3 years to be able to pronounce it. I wouldn't even give it to Stu. But anyway.
You're lucky I can say diner.
His father owned Libby's Diner, right? So I was working in a restaurant down the street, and it was Easter Sunday or whatever. We were closed. And he goes, hey, you want to come down and help my dad out on the grill? So I'm like, yeah, sure, you know, Easter Sunday, whatever. So I go down there. Now, I'm thinking grill like steaks, you know, like in a steakhouse. He's thinking grill like griddle,
yeah,
like with eggs, right?
Griddle with eggs.
So I get an apron on. I'm standing in front of this thing I don't even recognize. It's about 4 feet, 6 feet, whatever it was. And then I get the opening orders. Now, nobody writes anything down, right? And they're coming in and yelling at me in a language I don't understand. I need 2 on roller skates with down to go. I'm like, what are you talking about? So I said, Sooty, you know, my friend Sooty. I said, Sooty, give me an all day. What do you got? He says, oh, you got 27 orders, eggs over light. You got 3 scrambled. You got 10 French toast. You got 4 pancakes. I got a pile of home fries. You know, looks like Mount Everest on the side. And I got 2.5 square feet here. I'm like, tell me you're kidding, right? So his father comes over. You don't know how to work no grill. He takes off his suit jacket. Whoop, 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 whoop. 10 minutes later, everything's out. I'm like, holy crap.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shordell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.
Crap, I couldn't believe it. So anybody who thinks they want to look down on diner cooks... please, that's a whole different skill set, man, and it's talent. It's a lot of talent involved.
For us over there, you know, we have my chef and my co-chefs and all those guys, we make some dishes that you wouldn't ordinarily order at a diner. And what I do is I like to give it to the tables for them to try.
Yeah,
so they realize, wow, this is not just a diner. They have good food. Like my beef goulash, my beef stew, my beef ragu, my beef stroganoffs, my pepper steaks. Ordinarily, you wouldn't order that at a diner. You wouldn't think to order. You go to a diner for a burger, mozzarella fries, like
salmon,
you said.
Greek salad. Yeah.
But when I give it to you on the table, you're like, how many people come up to me and say, oh my God, that's the most amazing thing I've ever tasted.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they don't realize that the diners can make it. They don't realize the talent that's there.
Well, of course, yeah.
Especially because I have these guys really like working hard to make sure that we come up with new stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's become very popular that people come in now and say, oh, what day was that goulash? Is it Monday? We're going to come on Monday for that goulash.
Yeah.
What day was that beef stew? It's on Sunday? We're going to come on Sunday because I let them try it.
Yeah.
If I would have never let them try it, they would have never known about it.
Yeah. You know, there was a place in San Francisco in the 90s called the Fog City Diner, and I remember going there, and it looked like, it was a beautiful diner looking, a lot of silver on the outside, you know, tile. It was pretty, really pretty, and you go inside, it had the clock in the front, the whole thing, and you go inside, they had a raw bar in there, and it was like, it wasn't a diner menu like you see in New York, where there's 150 things on it, you know, it was kind of more like a restaurant that was like kind of masquerading as a diner. But it was the coolest thing, and I remember thinking, geez, I got to do something like that on Long Island. And then I realized, I don't know if that's going to work on Long Island, because we have this concept of what a diner is in our heads here, because we've been schooled on it for so long and had it for so long, and I just don't know if it would have worked or not, and thank God I didn't try it. So I'll leave the diner to the diner guys here. That's a whole different subject, you know. But it's really a shame. I mean, we were talking about this before in the green room about how many diners are closing now. And I did have a funny experience, though. I went into, I think it was Majestic, right after the pandemic, or it was maybe in the middle of the pandemic, and they had the menu, the abbreviated pandemic menu. And I was laughing because it had two sides and it had 185 things on it. You know, it was cut down from 1,050 or something. I said, this is the abbreviated menu, you know, back and forth. It was cute.
No, again, diners have a place in probably all of our youth.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in Oceanside, and there was the Rainbow Diner. There was the East Bay Diner. There was the Golden Coach was in East Rockaway. And
yeah, there were like 7-Elevens back then.
Yeah, and like morning, Friday night, like you'd go there late, and you just hope that your parents weren't there because you got back from a night of doing whatever you were doing.
Debauchery.
And I just remember I was always, it was like a cheeseburger deluxe and a black and white ice cream soda.
There you go. And then a black and white cookie the size of a manhole cover when you leave, you know, to eat on the way home.
To your point before, I think the main reason why the diners are closing is because there's really nobody that's my age anymore that wants to do it anymore. Like we talked about the kids. A lot of the kids don't want to do this anymore. It's hard work. Like I said, 7 days a week, 15, 14 hours a day. It's not that easy.
No,
a lot of pressure, a lot of stress.
There is a lot of stress. And you know, the margins aren't big. You know what I mean? You have to really work hard to make a little bit of money.
Yep.
And, you know, I have a friend who has, he has five diners at the moment. And he told me that he was making more money 20 years ago with one than he's making now with five, which is a testament to what's going on in the restaurant business these days. You know?
Well, how many employees do you have with the one?
78.
Wow.
78.
That's incredible. That's incredible. Employees. So you guys have to share the story. When we were out in the hall, Tom and Gus were talking about difficult customers.
Oh.
Or eccentricities of customers.
I have a PhD in that.
And you were talking about the how some guests have a certain table or area that they must dine in.
Yeah, I've walked hundreds of customers, hundreds of miles around dining rooms just searching for the right seat table. It's like, you know, it reminds me of walking a dog in the winter. He knows he has to go. I know he has to go. But he won't go until he's sniffed every square inch of Westbury. You know what I mean? Until he finally finds the right spot. And it's the same thing. You're walking around with these people going, would you just land somewhere?
Well, Gus, share what you said. It was very polite.
I say to them, you know, they say to me, you know, I say, follow me. Hi, how are you? How you doing? Follow me, please, this way. So we start walking. They say to me, well, can we sit on the other side? And I look at them and I say, sure, you can sit anywhere you want. But just so you know, the food does this the same on that side as it does on this side.
Yeah, of course.
The food tastes the same, just so you know. But we go over there. It's okay. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Well, I developed a strategy where I take them to the best table first because I know they won't sit there, right? And then we slowly get to the worst table because they think they have all the power at that point. You know?
Well, at the embassy, there's definitely different real estate. You got up front, you got the counter up front, then you got the middle area, and then you got the back dining room.
Siberia.
The back dining room area, And the back dining room area is usually, you know, the parties you put together, you know, the 12s, the 15s, the 20s.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
a lot of people
sure.
don't want to sit back there because with
the
all the
noise
parties.
And again.
Well, that's another thing. You guys are like must be good at doing puzzles because people come in with crazy numbers of people, and it's not like they call up in advance. You know, they come from a meeting
right
or whatever. 12 people, please. And you guys are busy, you know, reconstructing the dining room to be able to accommodate people.
It's not that easy, especially when the dining room's not that big and you have to make sure that people can access and walk still.
Oh, sure,
Because if you close it off, how are they going to go to the
bathroom? Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I had a customer one time say to me, thank God you left that open because how was I going to get to the bathroom? How was I going to get to the bathroom?
And you know, the people always have something to say. But I had a woman one time who was insisting on having a horseshoe-shaped table. And I'm like, you know, she says, well, if we have a one long table, the people on the one end can't talk to the people on the other end. I said, well, if you have a horseshoe, you know, they're not gonna, that one on the corner is not going to be able to talk to the other one on the corner, and my waitress isn't going to be able to serve you, you know? She was insistent. So we set up the horseshoe table, and she goes to me, this isn't going to work. I know. That's what we were trying to tell you, you know? They just keep going, you know? It's nuts.
So I have a question. Do you know the family that owns the Golden Reef Diner in Rockville Center?
Yes, very well.
I find that to be a very interesting story. It's a very robust diner.
Good people, very good people.
It's, I guess, in Rockville Center on Sunrise Highway. It's been there forever. They serve gelato, and it's just a crazy good place. Follows in the spirit of what you're doing.
Both sons are lawyers. And they actually took over the Lanyon.
Well, that's where I was going with this. You know, it's
But they're amazing. They're both amazing kids.
Yeah.
Amazing.
People always wonder, you know,
my friend's
like,
a chef there at the Lanyon.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But people always wonder, you know, is it gourmet? Let's put in quotes. And then you have the family again. They bid on the Lanyon. I guess I forget what the old name was.
That was Tony. What's his name?
Tony.
Yeah.
Capitello.
The restaurant up at Eisenhower Park, and now they have this high end, wonderful dining establishment, catering facility.
It's a beautiful place too. They did a nice job with the
gorgeous.
Renovation stuff.
Beautiful.
Yeah, put a lot of money in there.
My sister got married. My sister was like the second wedding there.
Oh yeah.
It was absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
So Tom Glossner is the chef there. He's been on the show before.
He's
a good guy.
Oh, he's amazing. And did you see? He's not only doing the Latin, he's doing like three of them over there in one shot.
Yeah. He's a good guy. Good guy.
No, that's crazy. So a little off the subject, but in the spirit of things. So in today's world, you go into restaurants, sometimes they have things that you just can't imagine. Like you go into some of these Italian specialty stores, and they have sushi. Mm. I mean, you got Ivoroni Brothers, you got Uncle Giuseppe's.
I got a whole opinion on that.
And for whatever reason, you guys stand tough, and you're not serving sushi.
You know, they. I see a lot of diners try to do this, like cheesecake. I was at the Cheesecake Factory by the question from Majestic the other
day. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're serving you egg rolls and I don't know. I don't see it. I don't think you're going to a diner to order an egg roll.
No,
I don't think you're going to the diner to order sushi.
Can I get the egg foo young, please?
To me, that doesn't click to me.
Doesn't compute.
It doesn't click to me. I don't see it. A lot of diners do it, though.
Really?
Not sushi, but they do the egg rolls, or they do the pizzas, individual I don't see it. If you're going to pizza, you're going to pizza place. You're going to Chinese, you're going to Chinese place.
There's certain, I mean, it's like Mama Goldberg's pizza. You know, who's going to that, right? I mean, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. You know, you're thinking about it. It's like, and diners, for whatever reason, you know, is kind of a Greek thing. It's a Greek culture thing, you know. And once you get out of that, you know, you get... I know there was one on Broadway in Hicksville there, and it was owned by a Greek man, and then he sold it, and it was, I don't know who bought it, but it wasn't the same kind of diner. You know, they screwed it up, and now he's got it back again, I think. You know, it's just back, and now it's back to where it was, and everybody goes, oh, yeah, that's why I want to go there again. They know how to do it. Yeah.
There's another interesting diner. It's sort of Baldwin Oceanside near South Nassau Hospital, the Pantry Diner. And they sort of took a different take on it. They sort of it's more of a restaurant feel than a diner feel. I mean, they roll out the food on a cart and stuff.
I mean, like I said, everybody has different styles. Like even a lot of diners are trying to go that way. I'm old school. Call me old school. A diner's a diner with the tap beer. I don't believe in that. I mean, a tap beer is a bar. Tap Beer is a restaurant. I don't really believe in a diner should be that old school feel of a diner, and I'm trying to keep that alive.
Well, that's an interesting question also. Is there much alcohol consumption by your customers at the diner?
At nighttime, you know, for dinner time they do. During the day, the mimosas fly. The mimosas fly during the day.
Yeah. Well, every so often I see the lady that's at the cash register. She, I guess, becomes the bartender. Yeah. But she's mixing up these potions.
Yeah.
You know what I've noticed, too, about diners? They're kind of a little bit bowing to the climate, business climate. You know, they used to be 24 hours all the time, right? Then they started closing at midnight. Now I see some of them closing at like 10, 10:30. And instead of opening at like 5 in the morning, they're opening at like 8.
I think
a lot of that has to do with you can get breakfast almost anywhere now. McDonald's, Burger King, delis, bagel stores. I mean, you're in competition.
I'm one of the few who stayed the course. The diner's Friday and Saturday is 24 hours.
Is it? Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, 24 hours Friday and Saturday. During the day, during the week, we open at 6 in the morning,
uh-huh.
and we close at 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
So it's pretty much 24 hours. The only reason why from 2 to 6, I'll be honest with you, is to clean up. But also, we would do business 2 to 6. I would not doubt it. It's hard to find the help.
Oh, yeah. It's hard impossible.
To find it. Friday and Saturdays, I have a hard enough time to keep in those 2 days. But it's more about the help. Nobody wants to work at 3 in the morning. Nobody wants to work at 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
That's interesting also. And again, not to pick on different restaurants, but where you are, you're right on Hempstead Turnpike by 135. Just a little bit east of you is another diner. But it's a different feel. It's smaller. It's not open as often.
I was always taught competition is a beautiful thing. The more competition is, the more people come to the area.
Sure.
I want everybody to do good. I never look. Everybody's got to try to make a living, right? I never frowned upon competition. I always want everybody, and I always support competition. And if that guy down the street asked me for something, I'd give it to him in a second because you should be like that.
I think restaurant people are generous by nature. It's you know, I had an incident years ago. It was my first chef's job. It was in, now it's called Absolutely Mario down in Farmingdale.
Yeah, yeah.
At the time, it was called Kipling's. I'm going back to like 1976 or 77, whatever it was. And I didn't realize that when I first took the job, we were getting open, and we had propane. And I had never worked with propane before. So the first day we're in there, and I see all the flames go pop, 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 pop. They all go out. I'm like, what is going on? So I go down to the owner. I'm like, you know, we don't have any fire. And he goes, well, did you order propane? What? You know, I had propane. What? You know? Anyway, so I call the propane people. They can't get there for like 6 hours. We're ready to open for the first night, right, at like 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock. It's 4:30, right? So I run across, there was a diner, catty corner, right on 110. I go in the back. There's 8 guys named Nick in the kitchen, right? So I said, is the head Nick here? I got to talk to the head Nick, right? So the owner comes out. And I said, listen, I don't even know how to ask you this. Can I borrow your kitchen for a couple hours? It was a Saturday night. They weren't that busy. Yeah, my friend, come on over, right? So I got my sous chef and my line cook putting all of the food in bus boxes when I get the order. They're running it through the parking lot, over the guardrail, into the diner.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
I'm cooking in the diner. I send it back out with the tray, over the guardrail, back into the thing. Now it starts to rain. I'm like, are you kidding? There's no God. You know what I mean? There isn't a God. So we got garbage bags over the waitress. So at the end of the day, I hear one lady go, as they're running through the parking lot, oh, these people, this is diner food that they're serving here. So I finally get through this, and you know, the owner says, would you like a glass of wine? I'd like a shot of heroin is what I like, right? So I get out into the dining room. This lady calls me over. She goes, you the chef? I said, yeah. She goes, you know, I got to tell you, the food's pretty good, but, I had this little fingerling potato. It was really soggy. I said, well, look outside. It's raining like hell out there, you know? I mean, she didn't know what to say, you know? Like, what a day, you know? But speaking back to the generosity of spirit, in the restaurant business, here was a guy has a diner. He could have said no. He said, yeah, absolutely. Come on in. Let me use his kitchen.
That's a great story. Yeah. I sort of have something in the similar spirit. Over in the Roslyn area, I guess there were a couple of high-end Italian restaurants or whatever. And I was at one of them one night, and somebody came from the other one and said, listen, we're short on lobsters tonight. Can you help me out? And they packed them up into some boxes, and they shared.
We all do it. Everybody knows the pain of running out or you know, having a problem or whatever, you know, and you do whatever you can to help. It's a community spirit, you know.
There you go. Let's take a break,
mm-hmm.
and we'll be back. Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI AM and 104.7 WHLI FM, Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show with your host, Tom Shawdell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
All right. We're back with Gus here, and we're talking all things diner today. And I don't know. I get, you know, when I think of diners, I get nostalgic because my friend's father owned the diner that I kind of grew up in, Libby's Diner. And it was funny because he was a character, man. Mr. Libby was a piece of work. He always had, you know, he was very dapper, slick back hair all the time, always had a suit and tie on. And I remember trying to sneak in there when we were kids, you know, in the bar. And we were like 16, you know. We go sit on a bar stool, and Mr. Libby had a proof, you know. He goes, you 18? Yeah. You 18? Yeah. You 18? Yeah. You 18? Yeah. Oh, yeah. All 18? Get out of here. None of you 18. It's hilarious. He was so funny, man. Good guy. No good guy.
So in today's world, everybody's looking for something new, different. There's trends. Is there anything that, like, you've done recently that you hadn't done in the past that you did because it's just what's going on in the world?
My brother, who's an NYPD cop, he brings a lot of new inventions to the diner. He went to culinary school in Florida. So he knows his stuff when it comes to food. So he added a lot of like new menu items to my menu. French onion burgers and cinnamon toast bites, French toast bites. He's got a whole Rosedale panini, which is a chicken cutlet with vodka sauce and pepperoni with hot honey on top of it. Me, I'm an old school guy. Like I said, I'm fine with a cheeseburger.
Yeah.
Once you start telling me about hot honey, I didn't even know what it was, to be honest with you. So my brother, I have to give a lot of credit to my brother on that.
Nice.
He brought a lot of new innovations to the menu. It's become a big hit because kids are looking for the new things these days. You know, they're looking for that kind of stuff.
Everybody's seen
so
Food Network.
So he keeps up with the times for me in that aspect.
Yeah, that's good to have because, you know, they're eating... Eating habits have changed considerably over the last 25 years, you know.
So, Gus, you were just saying before, because I make my living by selling advertising, but for marketing your diner, you said you have to me, it's a fairly unique concept, which is you smother the customer with sampling.
Yeah, I mean, what better way to show off your food? And people say to me, you know, it's funny, I'm going to give you funny stories. The busboy will drop it off at the table, like a piece of beef stew or whatever, and they say, we didn't order this. Like, we didn't order this.
Yeah.
And I go over and I say, guys, it's a present for me. I want you to see what kind of food that I have over here. Oh, okay. That was very nice.
Can we get an extra spoon?
But they like, we didn't order this. And I said, listen, it's from me. I want you to see what kind of food that we have here. Because, again, I want to differentiate myself from any other diner.
Sure.
Because not a lot of diners still serve the beef stews and the beef, especially after COVID, they stopped.
Yeah.
So, and if they do make it, what happens? If you don't sell it, if you don't sell the food, what are you going to do with it? It's going to go in the garbage.
Right, of course.
It's going to go in the garbage.
Yeah.
You know, so it's better to give it away and let people try it.
Sure.
Right?
So that all these different specialties, because I'm drooling, do you have those every night or it's different night of the week?
Certain nights or certain days. So like I said, on Mondays is my beef stroganoff. On Tuesdays is my beef goulash. Wednesdays is my beef ragu, which is excellent. It's in a red wine sauce with pearl onions. It's amazing, but it's like a beef stew meat.
Yeah.
Thursdays is my pepper steak, and of course, Thursdays is corned beef and cabbage night. Fridays is lamb shank with orzo. Back in the day, they used to make those all the time.
Sure.
And shrimp creole. Remember the shrimp creole back in the day?
Of course.
Shrimp creole is really good, too. Saturdays is my pot roast, and the best thing on the menu, the short rib, boneless short rib.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. On Saturdays. Sundays is my beef stew night with what else we have? All kinds of stuff.
See, it's interesting you said that because I guess it's one of the diners that's closing, the one that's in Lindenhurst. It was supposed to become a 7-Eleven or whatever.
Yeah, they closed it right.
But I have a family member that moved to Lindenhurst and they had some sort of family meal. So there were 20 people or whatever. But I heard them talking, you know. I don't know which night of the week, but I have this favorite that they do. So it's pretty cool that you have a routine.
And back in the day, I mean, I know diners for my whole life. Thursday's pea soup day. I don't know if you remember. Thursday's always pea soup day. And Sunday's cream and turkey day. No matter where you go in the diner, Sunday's cream and turkey.
Now, does your pea soup have ham in it?
No, I don't put the ham in it. I don't put the ham in it.
That's the way I like it.
You do.
I like it the way you just said.
When I'm sitting here, I mean, you can define diners by, the term comfort food. I mean, that's what diners are all about. Diners are about, you know, meatloaf and stews and ragouts and, you know, braises and stuff that, you know, it's grandma food, really. Yeah. It's what,
and I love the way you just said about the, like, French toast tidbits. All of a sudden, that's a thing.
Yeah. Instead of just having plain old French toast, now you're going to have it deep fried with powdered sugar and cinnamon on top. I mean, they're really good, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But.
Because at one point it was just, you know, a piece of bread. Then they started making, like, strips. Now it's tidbits.
Yeah. Should serve with a side of insulin. It's a sugar rush.
So are there any foods that, like, have gone the way of...
The Whigs?
You know, that just aren't popular anymore, like, that you've taken off the menu.
No, I mean, I push everything, to be honest with you. I push it. If I see that it's not... If you make it the right way... They don't go away.
And do you do like a fried chicken or?
Yeah, we have the fried chicken in the basket. We have the leg, the thigh. Yeah, yeah. Nice big pieces.
And has, during season, like I guess Lent is in the air now. Do you find more people?
Fish. My fish is through the roof on Fridays. Yeah, for sure. Especially during Lent. We have to make sure my cook says to me, oh my God, I hope I ordered enough filet because we went through so much of it. So yes, of course, during the holidays, we make the...
There's so many things that I come to mind when I think diner. A stuffed sole, I guess, with spinach and feta.
Spinach, feta, crab meat. You have salmon. You have stuffed shrimp. You have all those kinds of things. You have seafood fried diablo in the sauté. Mm-hmm. That's another thing that's we do good over there. I market it too. Is our sauté dishes, our chicken princess, which is a chicken franchise stuffed with broccoli and crab meat.
Nice.
With melted mozzarella cheese. It's like a mountain.
Yeah, yeah.
Chicken ala billy, which I named after my brother, is a chicken marsala with prosciutto, spinach, and melted mozzarella cheese.
Uh-huh.
You're just taking things and you're adding to it,
you know? Sure, yeah, yeah, yeah. Nice.
So is there ever a day in the calendar year that I would pull up to the Embassy Diner and you weren't open?
No. 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Never close. Oh, I'm sorry. Christmas.
Okay.
I learned... My father, all the years in the business, was always open on Christmas. And when I had my kids, I promised them that I would close.
You'd be home, yeah.
That I'd be home. It was a tough one. Trust me, my dad was not happy with me about it.
No.
Dad was not happy with me about it. And it would be a big money day.
It is a big money
but
day.
But in the end, I want to learn from my dad's mistakes. You know, I never saw my dad, so I want to be able to see my children.
Sure. Good for you. Good for you.
So I also, an interesting thing in change, because of COVID, I things definitely changed, but like Tom, you were mentioning the big cookies. Like, but in the day, there would be a tray of cookies on the counter, and some diners, and I feign knowledge of it at the Embassy, but they individually wrap the cookies now.
Yeah, I always thought I used to tease my friend Sooty. I said, you know, Sooty, there's got to be a baker somewhere in Astoria that's sending all this stuff out because it's all like. 2 feet that layer wait, cakes and it's
two
crazy.
Bakers. I have two bakers in the diner, and they have a hard time keeping up with two.
And
bakers.
I was just going to ask you that. So you bakers. Do your own baking?
Own baking, but it's hard. I mean, I have two, and they have a hard time keeping up because it just goes through so much. And we do it differently now. I think it catches the eye better. Back in the day, when we used to go into the diners, used to be those whole cakes, right?
Yeah.
It used to be the round cakes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We cut them up and we put them into pieces so you can actually see inside the cake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It actually works out better.
Yeah, better merchandise.
Do you bake your own hollies and stuff?
Everything's French toast, everything's done in the diner.
What's really cool comes to mind at a diner is the fresh holly. You would get a little plate of coleslaw with pickles.
Yep. Oh, yeah. It's like the Jewish deli, the same thing.
Coleslaw is amazing. Art that is really good. I get compliments about it nonstop.
You do your own?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
None of that Sally Sherman stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I mean, some people, because I see the delivery, they get buckets of coleslaw and buckets of pickles.
Pickles we buy, but the coleslaw, no. Coleslaw is made in-house. It's absolutely delicious.
Yeah, yeah.
I get compliments on it all day long.
Well, this is the reason you're busy. I mean, you know, there's a big difference between, you know, stuff that you make and stuff that you buy. You know, I mean, there's convenience factor. You know, for some of it, I mean, you can get, I mean, now I can, if I want, I can order carrots already shredded if I want them. I can order, you know, onions and peppers diced if I want them.
So here's an interesting question as far as supplying the diner. You have ketchup, you have mustard, and you have stuff that you leaf on the table or whatever. I've seen some diners today, they don't have the name brand product on the thing, and I don't know what your thoughts on it. You know, there's like an institutional
version. I'm
going
to tell you what, as soon as I bought the diner, they had no name brand ketchups and all that kind of stuff. I switched it right away.
Yeah, you got to have
I switched
that.
It right away. Right away, I switched it to the name brand. It's very important when you're busy and people see that you're busy to the public. It's very important that you spend the money back into the place, that they see you're spending the money back into the place, and it's not just going in your pocket. You have to spend money into that. I'm constantly fixing the diner because the people come to spend their time there. I want them to be happy. Yeah. I want them to show, hey, listen, look what you guys are doing. You're making me, I'm building this for you. I'm building that for you. I want to be able to spend the money on them.
Sure. This is, again, we were talking in the hall, and I don't want to get you in trouble with your dad, but it's a funny story. You got a new car, and you said, and your dad said, hey, this is the, you know.
He says to me, hide that thing. What's the matter with you? He says to me, people are going to think that you have money if you're spending all this money on a car. And I said to him, Dad, in all due respect, if the customers want to work 7 days a week, 15 hours a day like I do, yeah, then they can buy the same car.
Of course.
I work hard for what I have. Nobody give me anything. Yeah. Everything that I have, I work hard for.
Sure.
I'm there all the time, 7 days a week. I don't see my family to be able to do what I need, what I do. So I don't think it's a big deal to buy yourself a present once in a while.
You work hard. You can play hard. You can enjoy life.
We live in such an entitlement society that people, there's a jealousy factor that you know, people don't understand. It's like, you know, I have busboys, you know, who lease these expensive cars, right? And they would tell me, well, I have to make more money because I have this lease. I thought, well, I didn't, what does that got to do with me? You know, I didn't lease the car. You did, you idiot. You know what I mean? Yeah. If you couldn't afford the car, why'd you do it? But there's this entitlement thing that everybody should be just given stuff without working. I mean, guys like us, I mean, I've been doing, you know, 14 hours a day, 6.5, 7 days a week since 1968. Nobody sees that. Nope. You know, they just see the fruits of whatever,
you
know?
See the money that comes
in. Yeah, I mean, everybody's in there counting your money. I mean, it's funny. They used to come and sat and look at this place. You can't get in here. It's packed. Yeah, well, come Monday afternoon. You know, you shoot a cannon so today, you wouldn't hit anybody.
So true.
You know?
So true. It's so true. I believe in that totally.
So how are you finding staffing the restaurant these days? I mean, at one point, I remember back during COVID, Tom was getting calls from different people that knew the radio station saying, oh, Tom Shordell's on the air. He must know somebody that I can get in my kitchen because they're dropping like fleas.
Thank God we're busy enough that people are making money, that it's easy to attract people to come work there because it's harder when you're a slower place that you're not making any money. But these guys are making money. And listen, I mean, not that we're there, but we all work together as a family. I treat them like family. I was raised the right way that you treat people with respect in order to get respect back. So I have no problems finding help.
It's funny. A couple of months ago, maybe a year ago, we had that proprietor of a restaurant in Oyster Bay, and he was interviewing people, and I still can't get over it, but some of the applicants said, you know, could I get Saturday night off?
Well, yeah, I've interviewed people over the years that I felt like I was being interviewed. You know, I had a kid. This is a great story, right? This kid comes in, right? My sister calls me. I'm a half an hour from the restaurant. She goes, you have an appointment here at 11. Oh, jeez. You know, I go running over there, right? So I go in, and this kid's applying for a job. So I said, can I get you something to drink? He goes, yeah, I'll have a Merlot. I'm like, oh, really? It's 11:30 in the morning, right? So, I give it to him because I want to see how this plays out, right? So I give him a Merlot, and he's sitting there sipping a wine. And he just graduated from CIA, which is a school I went to 100 years ago, right? So I said, well, what do you want to do? He goes, well, I don't want the executive chef position or anything, but I think an executive sous chef. So I said, okay. Let's pretend I even know what executive sous chef is. How are you going to be an executive sous chef with absolutely no experience in a 3-star, you know, $4 million a year restaurant, you know, with, you know, well, my schooling, you know, I did 2 years here. I said, okay, how long would you smoke an ostrich thigh for at what temperature to get it medium rare? I don't know. What's the percentage of sugar to water would you use for lemon thyme syrup? I don't know. How long do you think it would take to get 36 gallons of stock down to a glaze? I don't know. I said, okay, does this conversation sound as silly to you as it does to me? Because if you're an executive sous chef, whatever that is, I'm an astronaut. You know? So he goes, I guess I'm not going to get the job. I said, no, you're overqualified. He just shook his head, finished his Merlot, and left. I'm like, I was stunned at the arrogance, you know?
So let me ask the two of you. So, Tom, your work involved in more traditional restaurants. Gus, the diner atmosphere.
I'd like to think I'm untraditional, but, you know.
But where I'm going is Easter's coming. Is that a day that people would frequent a diner? Do they go to the high end restaurant? What's the mentality?
All the above. Yeah, we're busy on Easter, thank God. Yeah, everywhere. I mean, it's getting to a point where now people are starting to feel more comfortable going out. So it's easier to go out than it is to cook home and clean and do all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And again, in today's world, everything isn't about strictness. Like Passover is coming in, and again, in more Orthodox Jewish followers, they have to have special plates, this, that, and the other. But others, it's just tradition in the sense of, do you serve matzah during?
Yeah, matzah, of course, brisket.
And you happen to have pretty good matzo ball soup year-round, though.
Our matzo ball is really good, yeah.
The only strict thing I have around Easter is no rabbit. I don't serve any rabbit around Easter. So kids would be horrified and terrible. But
Going back to the story where you said, I had a guy come and ask me for a job as a dishwasher. I mean, barely spoke English and was asking me all these questions. And one of the questions was, what time is my break? What time is your break?
I know. We get them all. You know, I get, you know, I can't come into work Saturday. I'm going to a Pink Floyd concert. I'm like, I don't believe. We had one kid come to me. It's so funny. Young kid, right? He was like 18. He's going to chef school and he comes up. He goes, Chef, can I get off next Saturday? I said, Saturday? Really? Why? I have a party to go to. So look at him, I pound my chest. Party! Party! Here's the party right here, you know? I look at the kids looking at me like, oh my God, what did I do, you know? And I just went, just kidding, yeah, go ahead. You know?
So a behind-the-scenes question. In the heyday of diners, they all had a jukebox on the at the booth.
Right at the booth, yeah.
Yep. That sort of has disappeared, but... Again, Gus, you're a younger guy, but in the day, did the family diner have a music system and stuff?
My father and the croissant, the first diner that he had two boxes all over the place. The Seaver Palace had it in the beginning, and then after the 90s, it just...
And that was that like a service? Somebody would come in and facilitate it, change? Because it was crazy stuff in the day. There was like these special labels that would go in the flip menu.
Yeah, and then they had the volume thing, too. You could put it up or down. The problem is if I had a Celine Dion fan next to me, I'd kill myself, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's changed. You know, you can see the diners evolving. You know, they're kind of coming along. You know, back then it was all about a million things. Now it's about high quality stuff. And
here's another crazy question that comes to mind. So, like, when did the panini appear? Like all of a sudden there were paninis, there were wraps. Like, how do you decide to now's the time?
Well, for me, it was when I bought the diner. It was already there. We just increased the amount of paninis that we had because I increased the amount of people that I had in the kitchen in order to... That's another thing. You know, you have to have a lot of guys in the line in order to do the right job. If you don't have enough guys in the line, no matter how good they are, if you're busy, you're not really putting out the right plate. Whereas if you have a lot of guys, like you said, sometimes I look and I see in the kitchen and I said, wow, Monday, look how many guys I have back there. But I also think to myself, if I didn't have these guys and we get busy, we're going to have a big problem because you've been in the kitchen. If you have, I don't care how good you are. If there's two guys there and the diner's crazy busy, they're not really putting out the right plate.
No, and the other thing, too, is you have to give them hours. Otherwise, they're going to leave. You know what I mean? You can't just say, can you just work 2 days a week when I'm busy? You can't do that. No. You know, you got to have them around.
And tell me, what type of pain in the butt am I if I come in to order a chef salad and I want, no roast beef, no ham, and I want it chopped up?
It happens all the time. That's easy. That's very easy. That's not hard at all. That's easy. I had yesterday. I wanted no Swiss cheese. I want American cheese. It's not that bad. And then chopped up is easy. They just chop it right there.
And how many people include anchovies in their Greek salad?
Not often. Not a lot. That's believe it or not. That's gone away. It used to be more. Now the anchovies it's become a little extinct.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Tom's pet project. You know, the Greek salad, and somebody gets an individual can of tuna put on top.
Oh yeah. God. Ugh. You know, it's funny. I have my pantry guy Ralphie. He's been a wonderful guy from El Salvador. He's been working for me for 30 years, right? So I have this particularly difficult customer that comes in, and she can make a Shakespearean tragedy out of a Caesar salad. It's like amazing, the amount of effort. Her dupes come in, for those who don't know what it is, dupe is a ticket that tells the kitchen what, the person wants. She comes in by herself. It's about a foot and a half long, and it's all red. Everything's red on there, So she orders this salad, with, you know, this, that. I want the tomatoes cut in triangles. I want the cucumbers cut in circles, you know, the whole thing, right? So he makes it, sends, I didn't want to chop, so he makes it, sends it out. She sends it back. It's not chopped fine enough. He chops it again, sends it out. She sends it back. I want it finer. He takes the salad and puts it in a Robocool, the food processor, and processes it into a paste. And he sends it out. And I don't see this going on. Right? So now she sends it back. I can't eat this thing. And I see this plop of stuff in a bowl. I'm like, what the hell is that? Ralphie goes, I was frustrated. I was frustrated. I put it in. I couldn't even get mad at him. I'm crying in the kitchen. I'm like, oh, Ralphie, listen, you can't send this stuff out. It was perfect, you know.
So, Tom, you're dating yourself. So you just said the dupe. In some restaurants today, and a lot of times in diners, there's an electronic ordering system. So the wait staff doesn't come to you with a pad. They come to you with, like, an iPad. Yeah. And the entering whatever the order is, and I does that go automatically into the kitchen?
Into the kitchen, the dupe goes into the kitchen.
Comes out on a printer.
It's still called a dupe, but now it's printer dupe instead of a handwritten dupe.
Yeah, I remember. You know, I remember the transition into computers, and you know, I've been at this since like the late '60s, and I remember everybody was, ah, man, waitress, we can't do this. Now you couldn't. Nobody can add.
When I bought the Embassy Diner 3 years ago,
yeah,
there was no computers.
Really? It was all hand dupes?
That was a big transition for me.
Oh, I bet.
Having to do that transition myself was easy.
Yeah,
it was not easy at all.
So tell me, I think I'm a pretty intelligent guy, but I would never know how to figure out how to use a cash register.
Well, listen, you know, I had an incident in Garden City. I had a sandwich shop there years ago where the electricity went out, right? And I got a girl who's in her second year of college, sophomore in college, right? She says, what do I do? She gave me a 20. Well, give a change. How do I do that? What? You know, didn't know how to make change.
They had to hit it by the computer, right?
Sophomore in college. I'm like, oh, my God, where are we going, man? Where are we going?
So, Gus, I got to tell you, I had a great time here with you this morning. I'm a little hungry, though.
When I get to the den, I'm going to send you guys food. Don't worry.
It's all good. It's all good. You believe me, you've done that many times. We just had a St. Patrick's Day feast thanks to you and your staff.
My pleasure. My pleasure. You guys are the best. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, it was a pleasure. I mean, and, you know, I could talk about diners all day. And it pains me to see some of these diners going out because I think it's just woven into the culture of Long Island. And like I said, everybody had a home diner when you were growing up, where you went after high school dances for breakfast on Sunday, celebrating birthdays or whatever. It was always the comforting old pair of loafers.
And again, you would walk in and it'd be the big dessert case with these cakes. And you say you do all that baking.
Everything's done on premise. And like I said, we went away from the big cakes. Now we have the individual cakes so you can actually see what's in the cakes. It actually looks better to the eye,
sure.
In my opinion, at least.
Yeah. Well, it's good merchandising, you know, people see what's inside.
In today's world, do many people come to the diner for ice cream products?
Not as much as it used to, but you still have them. You still have the mother and the daughter or the father and son that want to sit on the counter and have ice cream sundaes or ice cream shakes.
Yeah.
It still happens. Yeah, it's still there.
Well, listen, it was a pleasure having you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate
you come back
it.
Again.
It's an honor to be here. So
right?
I appreciate
all right. So we're going to close the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life like we normally do. Life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza. Ta-da.
Broadway comes to Babylon at the Argyle Theater. Experience the musical phenomenon Jersey Boys live on stage. Tickets are going fast, so reserve your seats today. Go behind the iconic music of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons and discover the secrets of 40-year friendships from the streets of New Jersey to the heights of superstardom. Season tickets to the Argyle are on sale now for the best seats at the best prices all year round. For the closest thing to Broadway on Long Island, visit argyletheater.com. And don't miss Jersey Boys, sponsored by WHLI.